For years, scientists have discussed human instincts still present from our caveman days. But what if feeling lonely was an ancient survival trait as well? John Cacioppo is the co-author of the book Loneliness, Human Nature and the Need for Social Connection. According to Cacioppo, just as hunger is a sign to eat, feeling lonely is an alert to interact with others. It's a need that is just as vital to our physical health and survival today as it was in caveman times. Cacioppo told Steve Paulson why over 60 million Americans need to start fighting against our isolating culture and confront loneliness head on.
Loneliness is largely stigmatized in our culture, thought to be an aversive state with no redeeming features, barely differing from general negativity, neuroticism, or depression. We found that not to be the case, that in our own research, it looks like loneliness has evolved as a signal to change behavior in order to avoid damage, analogous to hunger, thirst, and pain. In this case, though, the signal is a prompt to renew the connections we need in order to survive and prosper.
Wow, you just said a lot there. I think we need to unpack that a little bit. You're saying that loneliness is some kind of a trigger that alerts us to change our behavior in some way?
Right. If you think about evolutionary time, hominids, humans, are not a particularly formidable species. We don't have the natural defense of flight or armor. We don't even have extensive weaponry at the end of our fingers or in our mouth any longer. So we don't fare well in a one-on-one against most wild beasts. But when we work as a collective, when we work as a group, we're better able to survive, reproduce, and foster our offspring long enough that they too reproduce.
Do you think people today are lonelier now than they were, I don't know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago?
The culture has changed. There are some sociological studies showing increased isolation in terms of living circumstances. The number of individuals living alone has increased dramatically. Currently in New York City, approximately half of the apartments are occupied by a single resident. That is an extreme case, but across the United States, there's an increasing number of individuals living alone. This is partly because people are living older, losing the spouse due to disease, and then remaining in their homes alone. But even when I've looked at the data in the Census Bureau for middle-aged adults, there are more people living alone now than 20, 30 years ago, and that's in part because people are waiting longer to get married. When they're marrying, they are having fewer children, and so you have smaller and smaller bands. Divorce rates are high, and so you have individuals living alone after a marriage. There was also a sociological study that compared the response to the question, how many compliments do you have, issued in 1984 and again in 2004. And what they found in 1984 was that the most frequent response to that question was three, that people had three confidants in whom they could talk when they wanted. And in 2004, 2005, the most frequent response was zero.
Now, there's actually a quiz that people can take about loneliness to sort of see where they rank on the loneliness charts. And you include this in your book. It's called the UCLA Loneliness Scale. Can you explain what this is?
Yes. One of the reasons we use this scale is nowhere in it is the participant asked to rate how lonely they feel. When you ask that question, some individuals, particularly males in our society, deny they feel lonely. There are other ways to ask the same question, and that's really what constitutes the scale, that allow one to gauge how isolated and in pain a person feels about that isolation.
So what are some of the questions on this quiz?
Oh, there are things like no one understands me, there's no one with whom I can talk. The idea that you are isolated, even if others are around, that you don't have a confidant, no one understands you, you feel out of tune with others, questions of that type.
So you're saying that probably a lot more people are lonely than would identify themselves as lonely.
That's right. It's about 20 to 30% of the population, and that means 60 to 80 million Americans at any single point in time would score relatively high on the UCLA loneliness scale.
Is it mainly men you're talking about?
It's an equal number of men and women. Various studies have been done to try to determine what predicts loneliness. And there are a few surprising findings from that research. The unsurprising findings are bereavement, divorce, kids leaving home, freshmen going to college, number of times you've moved over the last 10 years, all predict feeling of isolation or loneliness. Some of the surprises are that men and women on average, are equally lonely. Men are less likely to admit it if you ask that question, but by other scales like the UCLA loneliness scale, they come out equally lonely. Some studies show men are a little lonelier. Other studies show women are a little lonelier. When you look at all of them together, there's no difference. The other surprising finding is that age really is unrelated to loneliness until late in life. That is, it's still 20% to 30% regardless of age. Adolescents, young adults, older adults, until very late life. And at that point, people are losing friends, family members. They go through bereavement. They reconnect. They lose a person again. And at some point, it just isn't worth the pain to reconnect. And so they stop. And at that point, their loneliness really goes up quite high.
Now, you've said that there are actual physical effects of loneliness. What are they?
Well, there's a variety of them. One of the physical effects is lonely individuals sleep more poorly at night. And if you think about the evolutionary time, this makes sense. If you are isolated from your group or feel disconnected from your group, and you're out trying to defend yourself against predators during the day with simply a long stick, you are at great risk. But nothing compared to when it's time to lay down to sleep, because at that point, you're exposing yourself to potential predators. It turns out that awakening in the morning is a very stressful event for people. And the morning rise in cortisol is actually higher for lonely individuals than non-lonely individuals. When we look longitudinally, what we find is that the morning rise is cortisol for you when you felt lonely the prior day than when you didn't feel lonely the prior day. Loneliness is associated with increased vascular resistance. This is the resistance to blood flow throughout the circulatory system of your body. The Framingham study showed that vascular resistance in young adults is the best predictor of who turned out to have hypertension.
What about the impact of all the modern technology out there that allows us to connect with each other in Facebook and other interaction sites like that? It would seem that these would help to ward off loneliness.
The answer is actually, on the surface, more complex than that, and a little deeper, actually quite simple. If one were to replace the face-to-face interactions that they have now with wired connections, the research shows that people get lonelier and less happy. If, however, one is isolated perhaps by stigma or disability, having access to others through wired connections decreases loneliness. Subsequent research makes it look as if the wired connections promotes actual face-to-face interactions. It allows people to stay in touch. It allows them to agree where they're going to meet, to connect in that fashion. Then it promotes actual interactions and reduces loneliness. And that's what we see a great deal from the internet. On the other hand, the person who is spending their day tending their MySpace or Facebook page to nurture their 4,000 friends, that does not do anything to lower loneliness.
So it sounds like your prescription basically is to get out there in the world and engage with other people.
It is the case that the full-stranded contact that you have in face-to-face interactions is substantially different than what you have through a telephone call or through text messaging. And again, we're wired for this. If you have ever seen an infant who was looking up at the parent gooing and the parent was making facial expressions at the infant, you may well see the infant start to imitate the facial expressions of the parent. They're not in communication in the sense of talking to them. The infant has, you know, really minimal cognitive machinery at that point. They're wired to pick up the facial expressions of others and to imitate them. We have neurons in the brains, putative mirror neurons, that are responsible not only for the production of an action on our part, but those same neurons are active when we see that action being performed by someone else. So we have this neural machinery that actually allows us to, if you will, simulate the actions of someone we see inside our own head. Those processes are promoted by face-to-face interaction. There's a level of rapport that's felt from that, from the synchrony between two people, that just can't be achieved by text messaging.
So on a practical level, it sounds like you're saying that we may need to force ourselves at time to go out and, I don't know, go hang out with other people, even when we don't really feel like it, but we kind of know it would be good for us.
Right. It's a little bit like exercise. I don't know about you, but the long runs are not something I cherish, especially in the winter when I awaken. But by the time I finish, I'm grateful that I did it. The one thing I would suggest, though, is that lonely individuals, again, have this feeling of threat that can compromise their executive functioning, that can compromise their judgment. And realizing that partly it's this feeling of unsafe that we all feel when we feel lonely that has an evolutionary basis. It's nothing, it's not a personality problem, it's just an evolutionary basis. Would suggest that if one is in that chronic feeling of loneliness, to pick safe places in which to interact with other individuals. And I mean by that things like community service, you know, helping to hand out food and a soup line where the others, you know, are receiving something from you and that, you know, they're going to get a very safe, positive response in return. And that's one way to start to build back up these connections with other people in a way that's not threatening to oneself.
John Cacioppo is the director of the Social Psychology Program at the University of Chicago. His latest book is called Loneliness. He spoke with Steve Paulson.